You want to follow along with my reading this morning? I'm in Matthew, the 27th chapter, starting at verse 20, and I'll be reading from the English Standard Version, if that helps you with your reconcile with your version. Now the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor again said to them, "Which of the two do you want me to release for you?" And they said, "Barabbas." Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with Jesus, who's called Christ?" They all said, "Let him be crucified." And he said, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they shouted all the more, "Let him be crucified." So when Pilate saw that he was gaining nothing, but rather that a riot was beginning, he took water and washed his hands before the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. See to it yourselves." And all the people answered, "His blood be on us and our children." Then he released Barabbas, and having scourged Jesus, delivered him to be crucified. I'm going to read the footnote of what scourging is from my Bible here. Scourging is a Roman judicial penalty consisting of a severe beating with a multi-lashed whip containing embedded pieces of bone and metal. Now, to see what happened after the soldiers took him and scourged him, let's drop down to verse 35. And when they had crucified him, they divided his garments among them by casting lots. Then they sat down and kept watch over him there. And over his head they put a charge against him, which read, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Then two robbers were crucified with him, one on the right and one on the left. And those who passed by him derided him, wagging their heads and saying, "You who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross." So also the chief priests with the scribes and elders mocked him, saying, "He saved others. He cannot save himself. He is the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross, and we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God deliver him now if he desires him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" And the robbers who were crucified with him also reviled him in that way. Verse 20 tells us the people who were against Jesus were that way because they let themselves be persuaded by their leaders. They did what the old expression of my generation used to say, drinking the Kool-Aid. That means is you do something dangerous or you do something grossly wrong and you do it anyway because somebody talked you into it. It's not because he was actually guilty. And Pilate's declaration, the neutral, non-religious person with authority of the whole mess, tells us that. And he's up there dramatically washing his hands of it because he doesn't agree that Jesus has done anything worthy of this. So what do we see their behavior? When you're determined not to see or accept truth, ginning up, or as Brother Shreve would say, boilering up, a crowd, a riot, a mob, is the laziest and most cowardly way of blocking the truth. And you see that in the way they behave and what they say. Obscuring the truth that we see here from this mob looks as chaotic and nonsensical as it is. And we've all seen this. If you've seen any news in the past few years, you know what a mob looks like and you know how it acts and you know it's just like this and you know it's for the same reasons. But that's what we see the picture painted of what's happening around Jesus in society at large while he's hanging on the cross. What's actually going on in Jesus' mind? And let's compare it. If I could put a link in my Bible like our mobile devices have today, I would put one to John chapter 19 and verse 23, which will tell us, I think, very clearly what Jesus was thinking while all this chaotic mob was going on around him. Let's turn there, John 19, verse 23. From verse 23, when the soldiers had crucified Jesus, they took his garments and divided them into four parts, one part for each soldier, also his tunic. But the tunic was seamless, woven in one piece from top to bottom. So they said to one another, let's not tear it, but cast lots for it to see who will get it. And this was to fulfill the scripture, which says, they divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. So the soldiers did these things. And I read this to show this is what the soldiers did after Pilate had given them to him. So we're talking about the same time frame as what we just read the crowd was doing back in Matthew. But standing by the cross of Jesus were his mother and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, woman, behold your son. Then he said to the disciple, behold your mother. And from that hour, the disciple took her to his own home. Now, it's commonly believed by scholars that Mary's husband, Joseph, Jesus' earthly father or supposed father, as some verses say, had probably died at this point and just wasn't around. So Jesus is concerned about, the thought is that he's concerned about her welfare. I disagree a little bit in the sense that I don't think Jesus is worried about her physical welfare. I mean, number one, he's got several brothers and sisters. He himself involved had been taking care of their mother just fine since their dad had apparently passed. There's no specific mention of it in scripture, what happened to him or when. I think he sent him to the apostle who he loved. John identifies himself as that person at the end of the book. I believe he sent him to John for the spiritual care that John could provide, you know, kind of his main disciple. Yeah, John fled with the rest of them in the Garden of Gethsemane when Jesus was arrested, but where's John today when this is happening? He's right there at the cross, apparently the only one. Peter followed at a distance and ended up crying bitterly. John's right there at the cross. So what's on Jesus' mind when as the songs say, howling mob is all over him? He's thinking about his mother's spiritual welfare. That's the primary thing on his mind. And that's all it says that he did specifically about who he was immediately at the cross and who he's talking about. I think in addition to that, what's most important is what he's not doing. Let's look at that. What we just read back in Matthew, you notice there were at least twice, and the impression is this is going on throughout the that time period that Jesus is hanging here before he died. They keep saying, if you're the Son of God, just come off the cross. That's all you got to do. Come off the cross, and we'll believe you. Because see, if you were the Son of God, you could do it. And if you really could do it, there's no reason you wouldn't. So the fact that you're hanging there is proof positive that you're just a fraud and a liar who said he was the Son of God when he wasn't and deserved everything he's getting. That was their argument. But it begs the question, why didn't Jesus do it? We didn't read it, but if you go back just a few pages from where we read in Matthew in the Garden of Gethsemane, when Peter takes out his sword and swings it at the high priest's servant and misses his head and gets his ear and then Jesus heals it, what does Jesus say to him after he does that? He said, put your sword back. Don't you know, as the song we sometimes sing says, I could have called 10,000 angels to destroy the world and set me free? It wasn't any inability that kept him up on the cross. But forget about calling the angels. Colossians tells us that the world was made through Jesus and for Jesus. And if he's that intimately aware of the world and in control of it, couldn't he have easily talked his way out of this and stopped it? We saw him do it numerous times in the Gospels when the leading priests and Sadducees came after him with all these trick questions and lots of them, and he silenced them every single time. Can't tell me he didn't have the ability to talk his way out of it if he wanted to. Why would he need to call 10,000 angels when he could just talk his way out of it, because he knows everyone and everything and knows how to do it better than any scholar of the time or any scholar who's ever lived? But he didn't do it. Why not? Why didn't he do that? He tells us elsewhere, because he chose to drink the cup of suffering and then of death. Got the suffering in there, Dale. Instead of drinking the Kool-Aid like they did. It's the only thing that kept him on the cross, because that was the only way to keep God from sending his army of angels to destroy all of us, because we deserve it. And you ask, why did we deserve it? The first verse we read, the chief priest persuaded them to force Pilate, scare Pilate, really, into giving up and having him crucified. And what have we been studying these past several weeks about what David tells us about killing God's anointed? Well, let me tell you, nobody's more anointed than Jesus, from God, than Jesus Christ himself. Not only was he handpicked, not only is he the Son of God, not only is he perfect, he is the anointed. And they killed him, and they killed him out for being manipulated into it because of the jealousy of the leaders. How much more do they and we, when we sin, deserve those 10,000 angels? But he didn't, because it's the only way. It's the only way we have a chance to be fixed by God and to be saved by God, so we can live with God forever. And that's what we remember when we take the Lord's Supper every Sunday. I hope it means something to you. That's why I try to write these things and observe them in the way I do, is so we understand why we're doing it. It's not just an act we do. It's not just something we do rote or just because it's a commandment. Yeah, because it's a commandment, that's good enough, but it's so much more. God intended it to be so much more, and this is why. We understand why Jesus did what he did and why he didn't do what he could have. We understand that. We take the bread that represents his body and the cup that represents the blood that was killed, as what we're just reading about here. Then we show his death to the world till he comes again and give everybody a chance to participate in it, instead of having no hope but the surety of those 10,000 angels that will come one day. Hope this is helpful and encouraging to you. Properly discern as we give thanks for the Lord's Supper.